Do you want to ride your bike, or do you want to learn how to train so you can really ride your bike?
It's all about building fitness. Get your legs spinning and get your heart pumping. It's not about training what you're good at. It's about training what you're not good at. They'll want to know what you've been doing for the last few months because you'll be kicking their ass. This is exactly how you get ahead. This is exactly how you get stronger. I'm giving you the tools you need to be a beast on two wheels. If you do the things I'm talking about, you'll be stronger, you'll be fitter, you'll be faster, and everyone around you will notice the difference. This is Tailwind Coaching, and you're listening to the Tailwind Coaching Podcast.
Okay, welcome everybody to a really, really overdue edition of the Tailwind Coaching Podcast. I'm your host, Coach Rob, and I've got a good show for you today. This time we're going to talk about, well, let me put it this way. It's right now it's near the middle of July, all right? It's been a long time since my last podcast, and that's been due to a couple of things. It's been due to the fact that I was on vacation in Colorado for more than a week, actually, and things have been crazy in the office with my practice, so I've been pretty busy with that. I've had a bunch of consults to work through here, and I've got a couple of clients that I'm working with right now, so things have been hectic to say the least, but I haven't forgotten about you guys. All right. And on my show today, this is something that that I've noticed I really wanted to talk about because I've gotten a bunch of questions about it. And I think it's really prudent because this is a scene that I absolutely love and I would love to grow. And that's the racing scene, the road racing scene. And today's podcast, if you've read it on the website, tailwind-coaching.com or on iTunes, we're going to talk about how to start road racing. All right, I'm going to cover the different kinds of road races, what you need to bring, what you need to wear, and some tips for the morning of to really make sure you get the best experience possible out of your road racing experience. Okay, first, I've got a couple of small announcements I just want to cover. And a couple of quick things I just want to mention, and then we'll get right into it. But number one, I want to thank my sponsors. If you head on over to the website at tailwind-coaching.com, that's otherwise known as the Daily Grind Cycling Journal, you can actually find a couple of my sponsors over there. Number one sponsor I want to thank is Road ID. When you can't speak, Road ID will speak for you. All right, you'll be able to, passersby will be able to identify your body laying in the ditch if you have an unfortunate crash or something of that nature. All right, it's really handy to have, you know, your contact information on that. In fact, I'm looking at mine right now. Just came in from a ride this morning. I actually still have it on, but it's really handy for your loved ones to know and have a peace of mind that they'll be contacted should anything happen to you. Because most people don't really carry their wallet while they're riding. In fact, I know I don't carry my wallet while I'm riding. So it's definitely worth having. It's a great little tool, reasonably cheap. Go over to the website. You'll notice a little change on the website. My sponsors are not only in a little pane on the upper right-hand corner, but on the menu on top. If you hover over that sponsors tab, you'll see all those sponsors just drop down, and you'll be able to click on each one of those individually. Head on over to Road ID, click through from the website. They'll throw me a few shillings. Helps to pay for the bandwidth and the hosting costs for the Tailwind Coaching Podcast and allows me to bring you a little bit more free information and free advice. Okay. Remember, I don't get paid for the podcast. I only get paid for coaching services. Thank you for my clients. I appreciate it. I appreciate your confidence. But yeah, a couple extra shillings heading my way, and it just helps out with some bandwidth and some hosting costs there. So head on over to Road ID through the site, and they'll throw me a few percentage points on the dollar for anything that you purchase. I really encourage all of my athletes to have a Road ID. Well, not even for the sponsorship purpose, but for the purpose. It's just a smart idea so that people can identify your corpse if the worst should happen. All right. Additionally, the Sufferfest. I want to thank these guys too. Dave McQuillan over there is a beast. He's a monster who builds some really, really awesome, really sickeningly good workouts. and these things are, it sounds odd because I typically am promoting my own training plans, but honestly, these training plans are fantastic. They are, they're just so good. They fit really, really well into some of my harder days. If you're looking for a little bit of video motivation during some of your harder workouts or some of my harder workouts, you can always substitute some of these Sufferfest workouts. They really, really make you suffer. In fact, he's got a new one out there called Half as Easy. It's a speed-based workout. It's a short one, but I'm going to tell you right off the bat, it's not easy. Half is not easy, folks. That's all there is to it. There's a couple other ones that I'd like to add here, and these are new sponsors to the Tailwind Coaching Podcast. Based on my previous posts and my upcoming nutrition plans and nutrition consults, and for those of you who are listening here, there's actually an ebook in the works. Not expecting this to come out anytime soon. You might see excerpts of it coming out, but I would expect more around a holiday release, if then. But U.S. Wellness Meats for hormone-free natural meats. I order lots of really good stuff from these guys. some really great stuff like Braunschweiger. There's some excellent steaks. There's nothing better than a grilled steak, you know, being in the middle of July. There's nothing better than a barbecued steak and some sweet potatoes and maybe some green beans or broccoli, the local stuff. But hormone-free natural meats, this stuff is really, really good. Ship right to your door. Again, go ahead and click through. And they'll throw me a few ducats towards my hosting costs. And, of course, the upgraded self store. For those of you who are interested in looking through my biohacking your performance links through lactic acid and you know, summer sun protection and some things like that, you guys will probably find that the upgraded self store to be kind of interesting. From the Bulletproof exec, Dave Asprey has a whole line of products that are just really, really pure products, stuff that really doesn't have a lot of crap in it, and some really, really surprisingly good coffee. So head on over there to the Upgraded Self Store, pick up anything that you need from there. And again, they throw me a few pennies on the dollar for sending a referral over, and it helps to support the Tailwind Coaching Podcast, helps to get this brand out there a little bit better. That being said, thank you, sponsors. A couple other announcements. You'll notice there's some little bit of change on the website. My menus have changed up there a little bit. My personalized coaching services, the downloadable training plans, and the high-intensity trainer workouts are those are now under the coaching options tab on my website. So don't forget to head on over there and check that stuff out. All right, you can. If you're really interested in getting personalized services, I've got a couple of, I think I have one spot open available right now. Downloadable training plans. I've actually added a training plan support option. For those of you who are not really interested in doing one-on-one, you know, pretty intense coaching, the training plan support option basically gives you access to me in a limited fashion to ask questions, physiology questions, nutrition questions, whatever you happen to like, about the training plans that you purchase. So these are really typically designed to be my modular training plans, but it could be any of those training plans at all. So I've got a couple of people taking me up on that and taking advantage of it, and they seem to be enjoying it quite a bit. So take a look at that. And of course, my high-intensity trainer workouts. For those of you in the Southern Hemisphere who are still stuck in the winter season, you're spending some time on the trainer, these are great workouts for you to really build specific skills. You can look at my skill building packs under there. Those will give you a little extra bang for your buck as well. You'll notice another tab up on the top, biohacking your performance. This is going to be where I do a whole lot of really heavily scientifically based posting. Okay, I try to keep most of my posting to a pretty generalized audience. In these kind of posts, you're going to, or in this feed, if you will, you are going to find some really, some posts that have some really heavy scientific bias to them, okay? So you're going to find a lot of studies on various things. So don't be afraid to wander in there. If you're not quite sure what's going on in there, just do your best and try. If you have questions, shoot them over to me at coachrobdc@gmail.com. And of course, again, you have the sponsors tab, which has all of my sponsors, and there'll be a few more coming probably in the very near future. So that being said, ways to contact me. Well, if you're listening from the website, you've already found tailwind-coaching.com. You can also find this podcast on iTunes, and I would like to implore you, if you're on iTunes, head on over to the Tailwind Coaching podcast page. There's a link on the website. Actually, there's a link in this post to the tailwind-coaching.com page. There's also a link to the iTunes page. Go ahead and rate that 5 stars. The higher the ratings, the more ratings I have, the more people I'm able to reach with this information. And I'll be honest with you, coaching is not my number one job. Any of you who've listened to the podcast for a while know that. You know that I have a practice of my own that I work in, and I do this for fun. I do it because I love watching people enjoy cycling. I love watching people improve and enjoy improving their cycling. I love watching them do fondos or races or whatever they want to do, and I love watching them enjoy it more because they're getting fitter, stronger, and faster. So those ratings help me push more of this information out there to more and more people, and lets me help more and more people, and actually lets me watch more and more people have a good time. And that sort of warms the cockles of my heart. So go ahead, head on over to iTunes, rate it 5 stars, and help me out a little bit there. If you really hate what I'm saying, just rate it 1 star, but at least leave me a reason why so I can figure out what I did wrong, okay? Always, for those of you who are loyal listeners of the podcast, you'll know you can always use the podcast10 discount code in my training plan store. Take 10% off any and all of my training plans. That's PODCAST10. Enter that coupon code at checkout and you'll get 10% off everything. All right? And you can also contact me if you have questions about my training plans, about this podcast, or anything else, coachrobdc@gmail.com. You can find me on the Tailwind Coaching Facebook page. You can follow me on Twitter at coachrobdc. You can follow me on Instagram. You can check out my videos on Vimeo, etc. You can follow me on Strava, Stitcher, Podbean, or Blueberry. Go on over to the website, tailwind-coaching.com. Head up to the right-hand corner where it says Follow Coach Rob, and there's almost a dozen options there for you to follow me. Training plans available. Early season racing is done, folks. You're going to be starting to transition back into your fall racing seasons, possibly your cyclocross season. So you may be returning to your build plans. You may be looking at peak plans. You may be thinking about cyclocross. By the way, I have a killer cyclocross module available in the Tailwind Coaching Facebook, Tailwind Coaching downloadable training plan store. And of course, you can take 10% off with the podcast10 code. So check out those modular plans. Check out my podcast on planning your season goals. See if you can get yourself all squared away and ready to rock out some cyclocross here. All right. That was a long, long update, but there's some new stuff going on here, and I wanted to get it out there. So we're going to talk about how to start road racing. We're going to talk about what is road racing, what kind of road racing are you doing, what's the difference between the different kinds of road races, what do you bring, what do you need to wear, some tips for what you need to be doing the day of so that you don't arrive a nervous wreck. All right, and we're going to get started with that right after I take a quick break to have a little bit of a sip of coffee. All right, let's get into the meat of today's topic, and that is going to be how to start road racing. This is one thing that is near and dear to my heart because I dearly, dearly love racing. I love the sensation of being elbow to elbow with like 50 other people. I love the sensation of flying down the road in a pack with people all around you. I love the sensation of the wind in your face, the sound of carbon wheels, the sound of shifting, of accelerations, of braking. I love the strategic aspect of it, the fact that you can't just sit there without thinking. I love how racing pushes you to your absolute limits, and it teaches you what your absolute limits are. And more than anything, I love when one of my athletes actually decides, you know what, I want to start racing, and I want to do well racing. I've got a couple of athletes that really, really have blossomed under those conditions, and that's a really, really cool thing to watch from a coaching standpoint. Not to say that racing itself isn't just awesome to watch in general, but it's really cool watching your own athletes blossom as racers and just enjoy and catch the racing bug themselves. So we're going to talk about how you would get started road racing, because it can be very, very intimidating for your average Cat 5 or, quote, newbie racer. But the first thing we need to figure out is, what the hell is road racing? Well, road racing in itself is generally a sanctioned, whether it be by the UCI or USA Cycling. Those of you who are starting out, don't even begin to think about the UCI. You're not going to be UCI licensed. You're just not going to be racing in UCI races, okay? You will be racing in USA Cycling races. So these are races that are typically either sanctioned by USA Cycling, the UCI, or they're put on as a practice race by a local club or team or something like that. Usually those are put on as a way to bring a little bit of money into the club or into the team or things like that. And these are very often your weeknight races, things like that, that are actually great ways for you to start road racing. But I'll get to that in a little bit. The biggest thing you need to know, though, is that a race is a really, really organized kind of event. And it's something that you really need to prepare properly for. You can't simply just show up in a pair of gym shorts and a t-shirt on a bike and hope to hop in there and be, you know, be good or competitive or even hang on. Granted, there are guys that can do that. A couple weekends ago, I actually witnessed a guy in a 4-5 race, a Cat 4-5 race, just jump in there with a t-shirt and some gym shorts and tennis shoes. And he actually did pretty well. He hung on for about half the race, which honestly was more than I expected out of him as I watched him on the first lap. So it can be done, but a little bit of information first will help you go a long way. Road racing is essentially a discipline where the first person to the line is the guy who wins. Okay. There are plenty of other formats. There's points racing, and that typically happens in criteriums. There's scratch racing. There's all kinds of other stuff. But for the sake of simplicity, let's talk about road racing itself. And that is the case where everybody is scored according to their finishing order or time in the case of a time trial. So road racing, really your sanctioned thing. It's like a competitive group ride where they score you at the end of the ride. And you can find a lot of these races by going to USA Cycling. They have a calendar there. You can go on to Bike Reg. Bike Reg will give you the ability to search by event, whether you want to search for a criterium, a road race, a time trial, a mountain bike race, etc., etc. Mountain bike racing is its own topic. Let's not get into that yet. And you can find those races on Bike Reg. You can also find most of your most of the races around you on your state's your local state association website. So for New Jersey, where I happen to be, the New Jersey Bike Racing Association has a calendar page that has a listing of every race that they know of anyway that is going on in the near future. And many of the actual listings on the calendar have the links to Bike Reg, the links to whoever is hosting them, whoever's putting them on, and the racing flyer as well, so that you have an idea of what the race is about. Road racing in itself is broken down generally into fields. For the men, you're talking about categories 1 through 5 and pro. For the women, you're talking about categories 1 through 4 and pro. And in terms of racing, you want to start, or you will start, from the bottom and work your way up. So this is very similar to the U.S. DEFCON defense system. You've heard of DEFCON 5 as the lowest, you know, rating of DEFCON, and all the way up to DEFCON 1, which is like all hell is breaking loose and the world is ending. As a new racer, you're going to register as a Cat 5, or sometimes called Citizens Racer, where you can buy a one-day license to try it out. As you gain experience, you gain finishes in mass start races, you can upgrade to Cat 4. Once you hit the Cat 4s, you need to actually accumulate upgrade points by placing in races for you to upgrade to Cat 3. And then so on and so forth. Obviously, the level of competition increases as you go from Cat 5 to Cat 4 to Cat 3 and so on up the ranks. So basically, the idea of Cat 5 for men, and I'm talking about men here in this case, the idea of Cat 5 for men is that it is a place for people to just cut their teeth a little bit, understand what's going on, learn some of the skills and techniques and tactics of racing, and then move up and actually really start competing. Women, it's a little different. Women start in Cat 4. Okay, Category 4 for women is the only place to start. There is no Category 5. And the only way to move up through women's racing is to accumulate points in wins. They don't just, you know, arbitrarily throw or move people up through the ranks in women's racing. And that mainly is due to the fact there simply aren't enough women racing in order to justify, you know, pulling people out of the beginner levels and throwing them higher up with competition that they're not able to, you know, race with or be competitive with. So it's a little bit different, and it's only different because of the numbers. But bear in mind that it is a little bit different. So you have an idea of what the road racing is, where you're going to be starting. Again, men for Cat 5 and women for Cat 4, you have the ability to take out a one-day license, which is usually a $10 fee paid on the day of the race, which allows you to race. And that $10 fee goes to USA Cycling, which covers the insurance costs for the insurance at the venue, and it covers rider development and things like that. Little known fact is that that $10 license fee, or if you're buying a season license fee, part of that goes into USADA testing for lower category races. Now, here in New Jersey, USADA has appeared at least three races in three consecutive weekends. So the USADA Race Clean program is really starting to make an impact, and I applaud USADA and especially the New Jersey Bike Racing Association for that. I know other states are seeing exactly the same thing. They're seeing that infamous black tent appear, and USADA is appearing to do testing on random people, which is really, really fantastic, because I'll be honest with you, the number of people who are using performance enhancers at the local level is pretty high, so it's maybe making people think twice about that. But anyway, moving on from that little side, sidebar about USADA and about dope testing, we need to talk about, now that we know what road racing is, we need to talk about, when you go onto Bike Reg, you're going to see a couple of different things. You're going to go onto Bike Reg, you're going to search for events, say, within 50 miles of you, and you're going to find a few. And you're going to find a couple of different kinds of events. You're going to find things like criteriums, road races, time trials, maybe even team time trials. There may even be stage races and things like that. But really, if you're going to start racing, you need to have an idea of what you are going to be racing so that you can sort of pick something that sounds fun to you and possibly sounds like it fits your skills as a cyclist. So right after this little quick break, we're going to talk about the three different kinds of road racing. Actually, really, we're going to talk about the four different kinds of road racing, if you include stage racing, and some of their little subsects. So we'll figure that out right after a quick break. All right, here we are back. We're going to talk about the three different kinds of road racing, four if you include stage racing. And the first one we're going to talk about here is going to be criterium racing, which seems to be one of the most popular races, or types of racing, I should say, in the U.S. right now. Criterium racing is basically, as I described in my criterium racing podcast, which I will link in the show notes for those of you who are really interested. Criterium racing is essentially a multi-lap race on a circuit that's anywhere between 1 and 3 kilometers in length. So you're talking somewhere between 0.6 and 1.8 miles in length, give or take. Very typically, these courses or these routes are downtown, town center kinds of downtown or town center kinds of spectacles, I guess is the only word I can think of. They're designed to be very, very spectator friendly so that you can really get from one side of the course to the other very quickly and understand and see what happens and what unfolds as laps are rattled off quicker and quicker. So criterium racing, as I discussed in the podcast previously, very short, typically very flat. If there are any climbs, they're very punchy kind of climbs. The biggest how do I put it? The biggest requirement of criterium racing is that you have to be able to handle the many, many accelerations out of corners. You have to handle yourself in tight quarters with a lot of other riders. You have to be able to corner predictably, hold your lines, things like that. If you are a one-speed type of racer who has maybe a couple of good kicks in them, you might find yourself really floundering in terms of a criterium race. Criterium races are no joke. They are really, really, really hard, okay? Even at the Cat 5 level, criterium races are very, very difficult. At the Cat 5, Cat 4, 5 level, there isn't a whole lot of strategy. A lot of it is basically just really be strong and hang on to the group and hope that you know how to sprint at the end. Otherwise, you're going to have a bit of a tough time making a dent or making an impact in things. But criterium racing is really, really, really fun. I will say that. It's sort of my bread and butter, and it's something that I am typically much better at than longer form road racing or time trials. I love that short, fast, accelerating, attacking kind of riding. I really love the whatever strategies involved, the moving through the pack kind of thrill, and I love the just the general feel of a criterium, the energy around a criterium. Energy around crits tends to be extremely high, both from the racers themselves and from the spectators who are able to see what happens every single lap. You can see strategies unfold and things like that. And don't get me wrong, there isn't a lot of strategy at the 4-5 level, the entry levels. However, there is a little bit, especially if you have some teammates. So, criterium racing is also usually the shortest kind of racing. You can generally knock out one or two crits in the morning and still be home by noon. So if you're really pressed for time, like if you're a family man or a family woman, you've got a family at home, you've got work to do on your house, you've got work obligations, things like that, you are typically able to knock out a couple of crits in a weekend and still have plenty of time to spend with the family or get the work done that you need to get done. So bear that in mind as well, that it's a really accessible kind of racing. Next up is a longer form road racing or circuit race. Circuit race is sort of, let me discuss road racing first. A traditional road race could be either a point-to-point race or it could be a loop. Point-to-point races are things that are very similar to the Giro d'Italia, the Critérium du Dauphiné, which is happening as I'm recording this podcast, the Tour de Suisse, which will be happening probably when this podcast is released, the Tour de France, which is coming up, the Vuelta a España. Most UCI racing is a point-to-point kind of race. They start in one town, they ride 100 miles to another town, they take a short bus transfer to the next starting point, or they start from the same town they finished in, and they race again the next day. That's basically a point-to-point stage race. Point-to-point racing is not really very common in the United States, and I'll explain why, because the organization and the preparation necessary for a point-to-point race is really, really, really significant compared to a criterium or a circuit race type of deal. A criterium is very, very simple. You show up, you park close to the crit, you race the crit, you put your bike back on the car, and you go home. A road race that's point-to-point, if you finish 50 miles away from your destination, you really have to get back there, and nobody really wants to ride another 50 miles after they've already raced 50 miles. And almost 99.999% of the time, the organizer is not going to provide you a bus back to the start. That's why most road racing in the United States here, if it is not a really high-end stage race, is going to be a loop kind of course. Tour of the Baton Kill is a great example of a road race, albeit it's a completely different kind of road race. It's more of a classic style race with the dirt and gravel and poor weather that really marks the spring classics, but it is a huge loop. It's a 65-mile loop of a road race, so you do start and finish very near to each other, which is a nice thing, especially so that you don't have to ride a long way back to your car after you've just shattered yourself to finish the race alone. So road racing can be either that long-form kind of road race that takes you 3 to 5 hours to complete, or it can be what's called a circuit race. Now, there's a number of circuit races here in New Jersey, things like there's a couple out in, not Raritan, I believe Rahway is a circuit race. Tour de Pitman is a circuit race. There is a circuit race for the Giro di Cello coming up here in the end of June. Circuit races are sort of a cross between a road race and a criterium. One of the differences I did not mention in a criterium, because I need to mention it here, is a criterium is typically held on completely closed streets. Okay, there's no traffic. There's no vehicular traffic on those streets whatsoever. They're actually barricaded off, blocked off. And typically town officials, fire, police, paramedics, things like that, barricade the roads and block off the roads so that there is a completely safe race course for you. Road racing tends to involve what's called a rolling enclosure. And this is very true of circuit races as well. You'll have a lead car and very often a lead moto or motorcycle, and you'll have a follow car and follow moto. If you fall outside that rolling enclosure, basically you become just another guy out for a Sunday morning ride. You have to obey all the rules of the road. You have to, you know, stop at stoplights, things like that. If you're inside that rolling enclosure, or i.e. inside the peloton, the police car or the lead vehicle and the follow vehicle are protecting you. You can basically roll through stop signs, you can roll through traffic lights, things like that. Again, only if you are in that rolling enclosure. This is extremely different from the crit with the blocked off streets where, well, once you get dropped, you can still race if you want until you get pulled. No, no, once you get dropped on a road race out of that rolling enclosure, you are now just another rider on the side of the road and you have to obey the road rules. That is one of the differences between the crit. A road circuit race is typically a shorter loop. In most cases, you're talking between 3 and 5 miles or so, although there are longer circuit races. You could deem a 15 to 30 mile loop as a circuit race if you're racing it more than once or twice. But to me, that's a little bit incorrect. The New Jersey State Championship Road Race was 2 laps of, I believe it was 31 miles. I would not consider that a circuit race. I would consider that a long-form road race, a loop, but a long-form road race. So circuit races, again, if you're not looking for a long kind of race, a 60-mile road race, even if it's flat, could take you 3.5 to 4 hours. Whereas most circuit races in the 3 to 5 mile loop size, you're talking about, you know, 55 minutes to an hour and a half to 90 minutes, 55 to 90 minutes, depending on your category. So you can, again, knock out a circuit race in the morning and get home to do your work in the evening or spend time with the family or the kids. So that's basically road racing. Road racing is a lot less strenuous than criterium racing. There are not nearly as many accelerations, not as many sharp corners typically. And there is typically more climbing on a road race, okay? So there's much more potential for a true road ride or road race style of race as opposed to a really short, sharp, high number of accelerations, things like that, and a criterium. Thirdly, we have a time trial. Time trial, you've heard it said many times, is basically the race of truth, the race against the clock. You are completely solo, and you are riding for the best time that you can possibly ride for. So imagine going out and riding for 10 miles as fast as you can just to see how fast you can do it. That's essentially what a time trial is. Now, there's some interesting stuff here when you talk about categories and time trials. Most people start off in what's called the Eddy class or the non-time trial class, at least here in New Jersey. That is no aero equipment allowed except for a skin suit. You can actually wear a skin suit, but you cannot use an aero helmet. You cannot use disc wheels. You can use deep section wheels, but not a disc. That's an important consideration. And no aero bars allowed. All right, you're not allowed to use those in the Eddy class or the non-TT class. If you move up to the time trial class, all bets are off. You can wear an aero helmet, skin suit, aero shoe covers, disc wheels, time trial bike with bullhorns and aero extensions, etc., etc. But again, time trials are great, great things for people who want to start racing but are really afraid of riding in a pack, or they're afraid of their pack handling skills. They don't want to take anybody out, but they want to get a taste of what the racing atmosphere is like. And very many times, people will ride a time trial just to check their fitness. There are a few benchmarks. I know a couple of coaches, and I tend to do this myself, will use for men the 25-minute 10-mile time trial to really determine aerobic fitness. For women, I typically use a 27-minute 10-mile time trial to determine aerobic fitness. And if you're falling under that, you have a pretty solid diesel-type engine, and it's time to start working on other things. But that's an entirely another podcast. One exception to the time trial style of racing is what's called a team time trial. Now, this could be anywhere between 2 and up to 7 riders all riding together. So time is generally taken as a team. There's usually a requirement of between 3 and 5 people cross the line. So the time is taken between the 3rd and 5th person who crosses the line, depending on the form of the team time trial. And if you have 3 people, if you only have 2 people, they'll take the 2nd person's time. But typically a team time trial like you would see in a UCI race, they're not terribly common, but they really do encourage a lot of teamwork and a lot of work with people around you, people on your team who you're working with, designing who's going to pull when, how long they're going to pull, how strong they are, what the rotation order is going to be, et cetera, is a lot more tactical than you would think. And it's a lot different than just a solo time trial where your idea is go out, kill yourself for 10, 12, 15, whatever K, 40K if you're really getting up there, and see how you do. All right, so time trial is another option in terms of what you'll see for road racing. And finally, and what is the infamous or phantom fourth kind of road racing is stage racing. Stage racing is, the best way to describe it, is a combination of all of these three. What you have is you have individual stages, whether they're on 1 day or 2 days or 3 days, or, you know, it depends on the length of the race. A great example of stage racing, before I get started here, is the Giro d'Uccello here in Sussex County, New Jersey, which is a 2-day stage race. Saturday morning, there is a time trial. It's an uphill time trial, so it favors climbers. Saturday afternoon is a criterium race. And Sunday morning is a circuit race or a road race. So you get one of each of the three kinds of racing all in one weekend. And those races are scored by points. So wherever you finish in those races, you can either win an individual race or you can score points towards the overall what's called general classification, where you place as a combination of all three of those. So stage racing can be any mix of any of those. It can be a long-form road race and a criterium. It could be a long-form road race, a circuit race, and a time trial. It could be 2 long-form road races and a time trial. Stage racing basically just means that you're doing a whole bunch of mini races. You're being scored one way or another in terms of points or something like that towards an overall classification as to how you performed overall in the race itself. So if you really, really are excited to get out there and try racing, I would tell you to try a time trial first to see if you can to see where you're at, see if you like the concept of racing, you like the fitness and the, you know, the challenge of it and the energy around you, if that's something that you're interested in. If you are very comfortable in a group, you can always try road racing or criterium racing first. If you really aren't sure what you would be good at or what you want to do, look for a stage race. It will teach you plenty really quickly. It'll teach you how to recover in between efforts. It'll teach you what kind of racing you're good at. But it's all about just getting out there and trying it. So if you want to get out there and try road racing of any kind, whether you want to try criterium racing, a time trial, a TTT, a team time trial, or you know, what have you, or a stage race, you have to really figure out what are you going to bring, what are you going to wear, and how are you going to prep for it. And I'll give you some quick pointers on that right after a quick break here. All right, so you've decided you want to go out and race. You want to try it. You want to hit that Cat 5 race in your local area, that Cat 4 race if you're a lady. What do you need to bring with you? That's a question I get more often than not. People think that, or have this, you know, think they have that there's some kind of mystique around a bike race. You know, there's an air of you have to have this and you have to bring that and you have to do this and you have to do that. That's generally not the case. A bike race is more or less just a group ride that has a timed or scored finish to it. All right, so those of you who have actually been out group riding, those of you who have been participating in your local Sunday throwdowns, or your Tuesday Worlds, or whatever, a bike race is really not much different than what you've been doing already. Something you do need to keep in mind, though, and things that you may need to bring. Some of these might actually be something you hadn't thought about. All right, first thing you have to bring. Very simply, you need to bring a road bike. The one exception for this is cyclocross. You can do some cyclocross races on a mountain bike. It's very possible, especially in the Cat 4 or 5. I think it's all Cat 4s, whether it's men or women now. But it is Cat 4. You can bring a mountain bike and you can try it there. But you need to bring a road bike, and in generally, you're not going to be able to use aero bars. So if you have clip-on aero bars, leave them at home, all right? Not only are they kind of dorky if you're not doing a time trial or a triathlon, they make you a danger in a pack. So no aero bars. Even in a time trial, if you're doing a TT, most cases you're going to be competing in what's called the eddy class or the non-TT class, which means you cannot use aero bars on your road bike. You cannot use aero wheels, to my recollection. You cannot use aero helmets. About the only thing you're allowed to use is a skin suit. That may be incorrect based on your state racing federation rules, but check with them before you do anything goofy, okay? Obviously, you need to bring a helmet. Most promoters will not even allow you to race if you do not have a helmet, so if you leave it at home, tough luck. You're not going to get not going to be racing that day. You need to bring your shoes. It's probably a bad idea to race in flip-flops, although I've actually seen somebody race in flip-flops, and I've seen them do pretty good, to be honest with you. But there were other things at play there besides that. It was a genetic freak to begin with, so racing in flip-flops was really not much of an issue for him. So make sure you got your cycling shoes in there. And of course, it shouldn't have to be said, all of this stuff can be packed and ready to go the night before your race so that you're not, panicking the morning of, trying to get to the race and get everything together, and then you forget something, and then it ends up being just a crappy day. So make sure you got all this stuff ready to go the night before. Sunglasses of some kind or another. They don't have to be cycling-specific glasses, but that is preferable. Basically, you want some eye protection, especially if you're going to be in a pack of riders. There tends to be a lot of debris thrown off of people's wheels, especially if it's sandy or windy. If there's some sand or salt on the road in the early season races or after a pretty significant heavy rainstorm. If it's windy, you don't want stuff blowing into your eyes. If it happens to be at all rainy or misty, you definitely don't want water in your eyes if you can avoid it. So a pair of sunglasses will be very, very handy. Something that has interchangeable lenses will be invaluable. Now, that doesn't mean go out and buy a $350 pair of Oakleys, but you can get away with a $50 pair of glasses from the local bike shop or from Performance or whatever the case may be. I know a couple of people who actually get away with using shooting glasses only because they tend to increase the contrast when you look through them, and they're also really relatively cheap in case you happen to crash or lose them or break them or something like that. You don't feel bad about it. Okay, so you need water bottles also. I would bring at least two. For most cases, you're not going to be racing long enough to drink two bottles. However, you'll probably want one during your warm-up and cool down, and then one for your race. Nutrition, I'm not going to get into nutrition here. I've already had lots of questions about that, and I've already done a podcast or two about that. So nutrition, whatever you're using, and that includes your electrolyte drink if it's a warm day. One thing I still always do is I always include electrolytes in my water bottles during my races, just in case. Not that I've had whole body cramping issues, except for Tour of the Baton Kill in 2011, but I would really rather not go through that, so I always am a little bit cautious about that. Anything you're going to need to bring in terms of tools, you may need to bring just a multi-tool would be handy to have. a couple of spare tubes, maybe tires, and a pump with you. Obviously, you don't want to be begging a pump from somebody while you're trying to warm up in case you get a flat or something like that. You're going to need money for entry fees, and take note, those of you who are not racing with your 1-year license from USA Cycling, in many cases, you will have to purchase a 1-day license. Now, that 1-day license is usually about an extra $10 or so. Requires you to fill out a waiver, and it essentially goes to USA Cycling to cover the insurance fees and event fees and things like that. There's also some other things it goes to cover, including anti-doping, but that's varies state to state based on the Race Clean program, and unfortunately not enough of it goes to development development programs and things like that. But that's a topic for another podcast anyway. After the race, you'll want a little bit of food or liquid to recover with. Again, I'm not going to get into nutrition here, but you will probably want something for after the race. You may even want to bring a beer or two if you're so inclined to do that kind of thing. All right, and again, these are all things that you can pack ahead of time and things that you can very easily make sure you've got ready to go before the day of so that you're not panicking. Additional stuff. People ask me, what are you going to wear? Well, here's a really simple one. If you have a favorite bike shop or a team kit or something like that, and please note, this does not mean professional team kits. Okay? I don't care how much you love that Liberty Seguros team kit that you have. For the love of God, don't wear it to a bike race that's sanctioned. I don't care how much you love your Rafa Sky jersey, it does not belong in a USA Cycling sanctioned race, period. And I swear to God, if I see anybody out there wearing world champion stripes that did not earn them, I'm gonna have words with you, okay? In fact, that would be a case of if the organizer doesn't have words with you first. It is absolutely 199% poor taste to wear world champion stripes, national champion stripes, anything like that if you did not earn them. All right? The Sunday group ride is fine. That's one thing. Do not, and I will repeat again, do not wear national champion or world champion stripes to any sanctioned USA Cycling race unless you're a national or world champion. Okay? We've got that out of the way. What do you wear? Well, you're going to want to wear, obviously, a pair of cycling shorts or bibs. You're going to need them, okay? The speeds at which you're traveling, the aggression at which you're going to be riding at, do not just show up in gym shorts. It'll be unpleasant. And the wind resistance from gym shorts alone will just make a miserable day for you. You can wear any jersey that you want. You can wear a local team. You can wear a bike shop jersey. You can wear a just plain black, blue, pink, yellow, whatever jersey. You can wear an ASOS jersey. You can wear a Rafa Le Tape du Tour jersey if you want. I don't really care. Again, as long as it doesn't violate any of the USA Cycling rules, as long as it's not a championship jersey, as long as it's not a yellow jersey from the Tour, a pink jersey from the Giro, etc., etc. So you can wear whatever you want. But however, you have to make sure it has sleeves on it. Sleeveless jerseys are not allowed in road races particularly, but there are some exceptions. I believe some time trials will allow the use of sleeveless jerseys, and I know triathlons allow sleeveless jerseys. But bike races, for the most part, road races, criteriums, whatnot, do not have an allowance of sleeveless jerseys. Don't expect to show up to a race wearing a sleeveless and be admitted entry into that. It's just not allowed, okay? You're going to probably need socks. You don't want to race without socks, but that kind of goes without saying. Your cycling shoes, obviously, like I said, if you're racing in sneakers and toe straps, good for you. Chances are it's going to be a rough day for you, but I'm damn proud of you for getting out there. Again, sunglasses are going to be a must, even if it's an overcast day. You don't want stuff in your eyes. You only get two of them, and you want to hold on to them. The helmet, like I mentioned before, and something that many people overlook are a good pair of gloves. And to be honest, I prefer full finger gloves. And why do I prefer full finger gloves? Well, I work with my hands for one, and if I happen to crash, I want as much protection on those hands as I can possibly get. So I wear a full finger glove whenever I race. Many people that I race with tend to wear a half finger glove, but that's entirely a personal preference issue. A lot of guys that I race with don't wear any gloves. And to be perfectly honest, if I'm not racing, if I'm just out riding or group riding, I don't wear gloves either. So it's pretty much an exclusive race-only item of apparel for me. But it is definitely a necessary piece of apparel to protect your hands. Now, we've covered what you need to bring. We've covered what you need to wear. How do you go about getting there? I'll be perfectly honest with you here. If you're not mapping out and looking and seeing where this race is and how long it takes you to get there and counting for traffic and warm-up time and everything else, it's kind of silly to even consider racing. All right. The first thing you do when you register is you need to figure out what time your race starts. For those of you who are not used to racing or have not raced in the past, if you're racing Cat 5 or Cat 4 ladies, you're very likely going to be near the early part of the day, typically one of the first races off. So you could be anywhere between 8 and 9 o'clock in the morning. So what you need to do most times when you register for a race, particularly on Bike Reg or USA Cycling or something like that, a set of directions or an address will be given to the start line area. All right. Note that this is the start line area. This doesn't necessarily correlate to where you're going to be parking. So I highly recommend you get to get onto Google Maps, plug in that address, plug in your home address, and pick the fastest way to get there. Always add an additional 15 minutes for parking, because you may not park in the same place. You may need to stop and ask directions for where to park. Always add an extra 15 to 20 minutes for traffic, just in case. What I like to do typically is I like to check traffic at the time of day that I'm going to be driving to the race, just so I can see what the traffic is like. I like to check on weekdays and weekends, so I have both a worst-case scenario and a best-case scenario, and I like to plan accordingly in that respect. You also need to build in warm-up time. Now, that's a very individual, very personal preference kind of thing, and this is something I didn't include in the what to bring because I wanted to cover it here. Warming up. If you are not the first race of the day, the chances of you being able to warm up on the race course are just about nil. I'm going to say slim to none. Sometimes you can get a lap in, or if it's a long road race, you're not even going to be able to get a lap in unless you pre-rode it in the days or weeks beforehand. But in this case, you'll want to bring a trainer, a stationary trainer, or a set of rollers if you're really, really epically cool to warm up in the parking lot. Now, your warm-up time will vary between person to person, but make sure that you include at least half an hour to warm up. All right, so now you've included about 15 minutes to find parking, 15 minutes for traffic, a half an hour to warm up. Make sure you add about 15 minutes for registration if you have to buy a one-day license, which many of you probably do. So make sure you include that extra 15 minutes. Now you're an hour and 15 minutes. And make sure you leave about 15 to 20 minutes to gear up and about 15 to 20 minutes to pack in your trainer and hit the start line. So you're talking about 2 hours early, all right, that you need to, it's about an extra 2 hours you need to give. When I plan to race somewhere, I, of course, have my own year license for USA Cycling, so I don't have to buy a one-day license, don't have to go through filling that out. I typically like to get to the venue at least an hour to an hour and 15 minutes early. That gives me plenty of time to not panic, be able to get my kit on, get all kitted up and ready to rock and roll, get preferentially a nice, long, easy warm-up in so that I can be on the start line ready to rock about when we roll off, okay? So that is something to really, really keep in mind. The morning of, even before you leave, you need to get up, you need to do your nutritional program. However you're doing that, that's entirely up to you. Do your nutritional program, and you need to have everything ready the night before. So everything I said in the what to bring section, what to wear, that all needs to be packed into your duffel bag, your car, what have you, the night before the race. I don't care if you get home at 11:45 at night, Just do it that night so that you can be ready to go the next morning, so that you can essentially just jump in the car after you've eaten and you can just head out. All right, that's really, really, really important. And one other thing I didn't include in that whole time frame, make sure you leave time to hit the port-a-john, all right? I can't tell you how many times I've seen people scurrying from a port-a-john with 5 minutes left or while we're lining up and there's somebody running from the port-a-john hoping to hurry up and get on the line. It's actually quite hysterical, but it's I feel kind of bad for the guys to do that, though. So keep all those things in mind. And remember, you want as little stress the day of racing as possible. You really want to have as little on your mind, as little to think about as possible. Your sole focus the day that you're racing should be, I need to get out there, I need to get on the line, and I need to kick some ass. That's entirely what your mindset should be. All right, so try not to put any extra stress on yourself by cutting it close with traffic, cutting it close or forgetting something and having to go back and get it, et cetera, et cetera. Okay, so that's a really, really important thing. That being said, I'm going to wrap this up here. We've already got a podcast that's approaching an hour, and we want to try and keep it as short as we can. So I'll be back in just a second. Okay, everybody, we've covered all of the basics of how to start racing, the various kinds of races between road races, criterium races, time trials, stage racing. We've covered it all. All right, I've covered a little bit of what to bring, what to wear, and what you need to do to prep and get ready and get down to your actual event, how to get ready to hit the line happy, and a little bit about removing as much stress as possible from your life there. So thank you all for listening. I just wanted to say, if you have any comments, questions, thoughts for me, go ahead and head on over to the Tailwind Coaching Facebook page. You can find other ways to contact me at coachrobdc@gmail.com, or there's plenty of other contact options on the webpage, tailwind-coaching.com. Remember to head on over to iTunes. Leave me a rating, a 5-star rating, if you like what you're hearing. That just helps me bring this podcast to more and more people and helps me grow the community a little bit more. Like I said, I don't get paid for doing these podcasts. I do just enjoy helping people out, and I love watching people enjoy their bike riding. And the more I can make them powerful, strong, safe, fit riders, the more I can watch people enjoy riding their bike, and that is really the ultimate for me. So, again, thanks for listening. Keep the shiny side up. Keep the rubber side down. Head out there. Look at your local calendar. Get out and do a little bit of racing. I think you'll be really surprised about the community that you're going to find out there waiting for you. It's a really great community, a really supportive community, and it's just full of awesome, awesome people. All right? I'll be talking to you guys real soon.